Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. On this episode, we talk a little bit about summer trips and vacations, discuss some analysis from Pitching Bot's Cameron Grove regarding underutilized pitches and teams that might be better at getting the best out of their pitchers, and wrap up looking at a few pumpkins who have had good results but may turn back into gourds at any moment. But before we get to all of that, Alexander, how you doing?
Matt, I'm doing pretty well. It's like been a pretty nice like June in terms of like both weather, which I know we always talk about, and like not weather things. I've been doing this weird thing where I have like a 9-to-5 job for the most part. Are you familiar with this?
Well, it's not exactly 9-to-5, but my day job during the school year is far more regular than I think your job has been in terms of hours with the school year rocking.
Yeah, I have like a proper like weekday class that started this week. So I like go to my office and go teach from like 9 a.m. to like about 5 p.m. with breaks in between. And it's just like possible to get home while the sun is still up and all the nice stuff that people do as adults. So yeah, how has your summer been starting for the most part?
Well, it's been pretty good. It's you know, the life of dad, right, who's off and three children. I've got, so right now it's very in flux because I've got my kindergartner who's home with me because kindergarten's over. She made it.
Good for her.
The baby who's home. Yeah, good. Sure. I've got the baby who's obviously home, and she's awesome and really helps out. And she's like 6 going on 36, and except when she's not, but that's a different discussion for a different day. And so like all of that just kind of goes, and I'm lucky to have, you know, my mother and my mother-in-law who want to come and see the kids, and it lets me go play golf, that game that I know you're all for. and so, you know, it's not like a rhythm of a day, right? Like when I'm not playing golf and I don't have somebody coming and I don't have like these things I have to do, it's like, oh, what time is it? Wait a minute. What day is it? So, you know, all that's good. We're going to be taking a trip coming up soon, which will be nice. The baby's going to stay here with my mom, and we're going to take the two girls down to Disney World for the first time, which is both exciting and terrifying at the same time. So it's all good stuff. It's hard, but it's hard for the right reasons. So I am not going to complain. I'm just explaining. It's been a nice little start to the summer for sure. Speaking of summer and like the thing that happens in summer, this is going to be the last time we talk and that people hear us before the 4th of July. What's on your agenda for that?
We're going to Portland, Maine, to do things that people do in Maine, which I think is just eat a lot of lobster rolls and get Dunkin' Donuts from Boston on the way up. So yeah, that's my plan.
Boston proper Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
There's also some, I don't know if this is your thing, but there is some great beer to be had in Portland. And
that's the actual plan, to be clear.
To go along with your lobster rolls. My wife and I went to Maine pre-kid a bunch of years ago, and it was awesome. It's just laid back. We like went out on a boat and went around, and it was freezing cold and she was all bundled up, but it was fun. Like when we get to walk on like these cliffs near the sea, and she dropped her phone in the water, and we got to do the whole buy a box of rice trick, which we knew worked when the box started ringing later on. It was a nice little trip. Maine's a pretty cool place.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Also to like talk about the thing that we've avoided so far really expertly. Not going to be 100 degrees there. So that's exciting too.
Also,
the one other thing that happens in summer, I should also say, that was really nice. I went and saw O'Neal Cruz, who we briefly talked about. I like actually went and saw a baseball game last night, and the Pirates were there. I'm not really sure that either the Pirates or the Nationals were playing all that much in said baseball game. They were like just a handful of hits and just a whole lot of not a whole lot happening throughout a lot of it. dead ball baseball is not that much fun on, with bad teams, because there's just not a whole lot of, like, I don't know, ability to sustain disbelief of drama for like a mid-June game for teams that are fighting for draft picks mostly. So
I can understand that. But there is something about being at the ballpark that is always a little elevated, right?
And also Patrick Corbin was like magically good. I see a lot of Patrick Corbin starts kind of by accident when I go and see the Nats, and this was like easily his best start that I've ever seen. He like had one earned run and like some absurd number of Ks. It was a lot of fun all told. We also, and this is the most important part, I don't know if you have like an opinions about where to sit, we were sitting on the right field line near where the President's Race comes out, so that was important.
Oh yeah, that's pretty cool. No, I think I only have opinions about where I sit at Fenway, just because that's you know, that's the place, that's my place. Other than that, no. I one of the things about being a fan of, like, I think the Yankees or the Red Sox is that when you go to see them play elsewhere, the access that you have to kind of choose your seat in a cost-effective manner is is interesting. I remember going to Comerica. This is a long time ago. I went to Comerica, and I was able to just, like, pick up seats for less than it would cost me for not great seats at Fenway, like six rows behind the Red Sox dugout. And then the Tigers mailed me in Connecticut, please, to buy season's tickets for many years after that. So there's all of that, you know, that's the payoff. Hey, a couple of programming notes I think we should probably bring up here before we jump into our baseball talk. One, we are going to aim for this episode to be a little shorter form than we normally do, probably the 30 to 40 minute range. We'll see how good we are at cutting ourselves off and not going past that. We're usually not very good at that, but we'll see. That's the goal. So if you're listening and you've got about 35 minutes left on your drive or whatever it is that you're doing, then hopefully we nail that, right? We're done right as you need to get out of the car or whatever it is that you're doing. Also, the next couple of weeks, I will not be here. And so Alexander will be the captain of the ship, the admiral of the fleet. What metaphor we want to go with?
I think like UPS truck driver would be like a pretty good one. That's really all I'm aspiring to most of the time.
All right. So what can Brown do for you for the next couple of weeks? And then we'll be back together on the other side of all of this summer fun goodness. So just be aware of that as you are proceeding through the next couple of weeks and the episodes come down. Do you have any ideas about what you're going to do? We're going to try and fly solo. You're going to grab a couple of guests. What's the plan there?
Well, I have a really deep curiosity about all of the things I know nothing about regarding the MLB draft. So I'm hoping to see if we can manifest someone who knows what they're talking about in terms of that. I know it's not me, so you will not get an MLB draft solo pod for me.
Well, that's perfect. If you're kind of taking over the host duties, pick something you don't know anything about. That's what I've been doing here for 64 episodes. So it's perfect. And on that note, let's talk a little baseball. Let's get into our warm-up. We have here a couple of tweets from PitchingBot, a really fantastic account, especially if you're into like the numbers and some really neat analysis. That the account is awesome. Guy's name is Cameron, right? Cameron Grove. Shout out, Cameron. Your work is awesome. And everybody should be following that and checking it out. Why don't you take this over here and talk about what his tweets say and why they're relevant. And then I have a couple of things I want to throw out there that they might, I'm going to preface this disclaimer, they might sound like I'm trying to poke holes in things, but it's really just my natural curiosity. And I could be way off. And if Cameron were here with us, he might say, yeah, that's interesting. And here's why it doesn't matter. Or here's why that's not a thing. That's perfectly within the realm of possibility. But that's going to be what I kind of do here, because I am genuinely curious about sometimes the way these systems work. But before I do that, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about what they say?
Yeah. So he had a couple, and I didn't even realize they were both from him whenever like they popped into my mind while I was drafting the outline. And of course, that's just how it happens. The people I follow who I tend to think say smart things are sometimes the same person instead of multiple people. Yep. The first one that I wanted to pull up was what I thought was kind of like an interesting outcome sort of thing that he observed. He tracked following a piece by Eno Saris about like pitchers who should throw different pitches more. The percentage of pitches basically that are thrown less than 10% of the time that are like better than a pitcher's stuff by his pitching like model in terms of like the grades that he puts out. So 2015 and 16, it was just under 4% of all pitches were like underutilized good pitches essentially. And over the years since, 2017, 2018, 2019, those dropped a precipitous amount each year until we've kind of hung steady since about 2019 in the 2% range. In other words, we've cut the number, the number of like underutilized pitches in half over like a span of just a handful of years. And we've hung out in this pretty good spot in the years since. Obviously, the reporting on major league teams doing model stuff to be really particular here that would look a lot like what he's doing or what Eno's doing, you know, they have different but the same outlook on how things should be, you know, different ways of computing, you know, similar. You can learn a whole lot just from like where and what pitchers are throwing rather than what batters are doing in any way. So if teams are acting the same way, and we've heard reporting about this, it's no surprise then that teams would be behaving in ways that this sort of model would like. But I also just thought it's really interesting to see how little there is left that's like clearly being underutilized in like a I can just run a quick query and like figure out so and so needs to change things.
Read out what he has here on his chart, because I think that our graph, whatever the right word is for that, I think it's important. It defines his like concept of underutilized pitch. He says it is, quote, one which is thrown less than 10% of the time while having better stuff and expected run value than the pitcher's average, end quote. That's his use of underutilized. So there's a couple of things that come to mind when I look at things like this. And Cameron, again, this is not me trying to poke holes in what you're doing. I'm sure that you have thought of all of these things. But just in case there are people at home that are listening or in your cars or wherever it is that you're checking us out that think like I do, my first thought was, okay, so what we have decided as an industry creates a quality pitch, right? So in this case, we're talking about expected run value, a pitcher's average, and then a specific pitch that outperforms that but isn't used all that much. Are we taking a system that has maybe some flaws baked in, creating an algorithm that has those same flaws baked in, and then running this statistical regression or whatever it is that it's doing, and it lines up, but it's lining up because it's got the same flaws. So we were talking a little bit about this before we started, and my teacher brain went to this. Maybe this will help you understand what my brain is saying a little bit more. I'm a teacher. I teach kids about the Civil War, but I do it wrong, okay? I then design a test to measure their success on having learned about the Civil War, and I grade that. So I'm designing the measurement tool. I'm basically looking at the criteria and judging whether the kids have met that criteria. And so I can say, yes, this kid got an A on this test about the Civil War, but is it possible that the kid gave me a whole bunch of wrong information about the Civil War because that's what I taught, that's what I put on the test, that's what I assessed, and that's what I measured? So that's the kind of thing I think about. And I'm going to give one more example, and I shared this with you before, Alexander. Like, we hear a lot about, like, especially in medicine, right? Like, oh, this and this are two things you don't want to have this one thing because this other thing will happen, like gum disease and heart attacks, right? And I'm not a doctor, so I'm sure that there are people out there who can tweet at me and tell me why this is a bad example for what I'm saying. But this is my brain. This is my natural curiosity. And I think we should all have this curiosity, because even if Cameron's done all of this and I'm wrong and he's like, nope, that's not an issue, I still think that we should think this way about things and ask the question. And then fine, we can learn that the information can be trusted. But this is how we also find out when things and relationships are created that maybe we shouldn't trust. So if I have gingivitis, I'm more likely to have a heart attack. Okay, that might be true, right? But is gingivitis causing heart attacks, or am I just not taking care of myself in multiple ways that's causing tooth decay and gum disease and also cholesterol and heart attacks? So I guess the TLDR of all of this is, are we talking about coincidence or causality? And if we're talking about causality, is it a causal relationship because they have the same flaws baked into the way that we are discussing and measuring these things? So where do you think all of this lands in terms of this kind of a discussion, Alexander?
So I do think that there's probably not some really broke system bad stuff going on here by, like, the way that they have shown their work. And I think that's the nice thing about things not being
big, right?
Not too black boxy. Yeah. I mean, a lot of teams are moving towards the changes they're making for particular reasons. It's not that hard to stop throwing bad pitches if you just know what a bad pitch is. And Cameron Grove and MLB front offices and people who are building stuff like them are all kind of in agreement that, like, some of the basic tenets, I would say, it seems like the overlap between a lot of these things, like, don't throw a bad fastball middle. Don't throw a bad fastball at all if you can avoid it.
But I think
don't
this,
throw a
this,
fastball to shape, right?
This feels more to me like your changeup is really good and you don't throw it often enough. The other thing that I'm curious about, too, is this seems to also somewhat coincide with some of this flyball revolution timing. I wonder if we were to go back a few more years, whether or not that this is, could be two things happening at the same time, that analytics are getting better. Pitchers are more aware. Teams are managing this more effectively and getting pitchers to throw their best stuff in the right situations. And guys are swinging and missing a lot more at pitches that maybe in the past they wouldn't have. And could there be elements of that here as well? And again, the answer can be no. These are the questions that pop into my head when we look at this kind of data, because again, numbers are numbers, but they can be used in ways that draw conclusions that might not be the case. And I'm not saying that's what's happening here with this pitcher roster.
I'm actually imagining, great, but from what you're saying, like a potential version of things where this is coincidence then. What makes for a good pitch may, because of changes in decisions from batters, for example, have changed over the past half decade or so. And so even though pitchers and teams haven't gotten smarter, it would appear as though they have. Like, that's a version of reality that could exist. I mean, you can go test some hypotheses to I think, invalidate that. And I don't think that's necessarily what's happening. But like another version of this then is just like MLB teams and Cameron have both make a similar fatal flaw about, you know, name some variable about a thing they're doing. Fastball height, for example. Maybe they're both over into high fastballs or whatever it is that you first name bunch of numbers on Twitter that thinks that the Yankees are secretly bad because they're trusting analytics too much. I don't know. Easily my favorite imaginary guy on Twitter right now is the person who thinks the Yankees are dumb because they rely on analytics too much. But like that sort of thing could happen, and we have to be alert to that. The thing about it all, though, that keeps me from thinking that's a problem is that these sorts of methods tend to massively outperform, especially in small samples, a lot of more outcomes-based things. And I'm having to come to terms with that. The black boxes that I don't love do seem like they're sometimes a lot better than the things that I do love in terms of their simplicity. So they do need to like cross-validate each other. But I will say, I remember a couple months ago when I said that I was trading away Lucas Giolito in a dynasty league because I was worried, not because any of my own data said mean things about him, but rather because his like stuff grades were all looking really poor and I was worried about the floor falling out. Well, it did. And I kind of like have to be reacting with some well-found trust that the people that they haven't loved in some ways have reverted to some sort of things. Now, there's still some people I'm concerned about, but I think those grades have even themselves out. Like, I think Berríos has like looked worse by his model as the year's gone on, even as things have kind of like leveled out. And like the statistics of lots of events is that rarer and unpredictable and out of whack with your model things will occasionally happen, but better models just have those happen less often. And the work about all this does tend to make me trust all of them.
And that's fair. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I also just think that when you look through the pitches, he did put this underneath the tweet, which I think is really nice, that do seem like they're not being thrown all that often. One of the things that occurs to me is there's a handful of these that are probably popping up because someone's fastball or whatever it is they throw a lot has just been garbage. So that if you just throw a mediocre pitch, you know, it's better than the garbage you throw most of the time.
It's beating your average doesn't necessarily mean it's beating league great average, yeah, right, or whatever. So it's just a different way of looking at it. Now I'm going to take a second and say, like, after all of that, hey, why might this not be make sense and why might this be broken? I agree with you. I think that what we're looking at here is one of two things, or both things at the same time. That teams are absolutely getting better at getting their pitchers to throw their best pitches because they're more able to identify which are the best pitches that a guy throws in the arsenal, and we're seeing them use that more and more strategically. It makes sense to me. It does make sense to me that maybe it's also easier to get some of those so-so pitches, especially from guys who might not have great arsenals to begin with, by hitters who are just kind of swinging as hard as they can and are going to miss a lot of off-speed pitches if they're not expecting them. I think both those things can be true. And I'm not saying at all that this stuff is definitely broken. It's just, I think it's really good for us to ask those questions before we just start relying on this data. But to your point, I think the way that he's doing this and sharing it and open about it, is the right way to do it, without giving away his secret recipe, to show that it is, it's valid and makes sense.
Yeah. The run value focus is something I really like. I also want to clarify, like, you got me thinking about like the swinging and missing of all of this. Is like, this is still like training your data based off of hitter behavior and then grading not on hitter behavior. So like the pitches that are grading well aren't those that are getting a bunch of whiffs. They're just the ones that are shaped like pitches and placed in locations like pitches that get a lot of whiffs or whatever. So, you know, it's harder for things to be purely outcomes based, but they're still farther down the line. Some of the effects that you're identifying, things that people would be maybe whiffing at more these days than they wouldn't have based off some choices, if that's a hypothesis you could test. It's just like not as direct, which reminds me of like the other version of this exact same hypothesis. The I ran a FanGraph search, and here are the pitches I found that had a swinging strike rate of XYZ and also this other thing and this other third factor that are all thrown under 10%, and so should throw them more, which is how we've kind of had to do it. And so I don't want to disparage it too much, but we've talked about this a little bit before. Those sorts of things are going to be constrained by the fact that if hitters aren't seeing pitches all that often, they aren't planning around them, you know, they're not getting used to them, they probably aren't going to see that pitch more than once in like a PA, so they're naturally going to do a little bit worse against them. I like to draw like the NBA shooter example, which I think is one of the like most crystal clear. If you're a guy who rarely ever shoots, defenses aren't going to be inside your shirt keeping you from shooting at the three-point line. But as try to be the guy more and more, as your cutter or as your changeup tries to be your outpitch more and more, people are going to game plan around it, and you get like decreasing marginal benefits of increasing use. So like
point of diminishing returns models is kind of what we're talking about.
That's a great
here, right?
That's a better way to say it.
Yeah. So like if you take your 9% usage and make it 20%, you might actually dip below your average I already forgot the metric that he was using. Runs against, is that what it was?
Well, for swinging strike rate and things like that, it will. The beauty of the way that like a stuff plus model would work, though, is because it's just shape and location. It's completely blind to how hitters are reacting to it. So if you identify an underthrown pitch in that thing, you can, without having to deal with the sort of, yeah, but the hitters would do better about it, counter argument that we just raised for the, here are the pitches that have a great whiff rate thing that I'm identifying. Like, that doesn't apply to the way he's going about things. And that's why I like it better than the alternative.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That makes a
and
lot of sense.
That's why it's also important then that teams are getting their pitchers to throw those pitches more. It's actually a good choice.
Yeah. You're getting them to do something that they're good at and they have control over, rather than worrying about what happens once they've lost control over the outcome. That makes a lot of sense. All right, we have another tweet. I think we're going to have to talk about that one briefly and then get into our numbers of the week. And it's going to kind of just roll right into our central question, talking about Tony Gonsolin a bit here. But before we get to all of that, we are going to take a very small break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back. Alexander, what's going on with this second tweet? Let's do the TLDR on this so that we can really kind of get into what you want to say about former Pumpkins and what's going on with them.
I want to call attention to one that got a lot more attention. And so I think it's a little bit more fitting that we do the TLDR on this, because more of our followers may have seen this to begin with. The one we first mentioned got like 18 likes and like one retweet. It kind of a shame. It's a great piece of like analysis. And this is just a nice chart of which teams have changed pitchers' quality most and in which ways. So it's just like a two-axis graph of how teams have affected the pitch quality. So like they make you throw better stuff, versus which teams have affected pitchers' just usages, getting to throw the existing stuff they have in a better combination, so like less of your bad stuff. And it like just charts basically which are the smart and effective teams and which are the less effective teams. Now, there's a natural bias about this, is that like if you're working with a pitching coach who like gets you, and then you go somewhere else where they haven't figured you out yet, you probably aren't going to be as effective. There's definitely some selection bias about all of this. And that's why I think it's important to kind of think about, you know, which teams are picking players up from teams that like they can and tinker with and improve because they have potential, and which teams are getting the scraps. So there's like definitely here. But
yeah, that's really important, because a guy like Max Scherzer coming to the Mets probably isn't going to see an improvement in his stuff quality, right? So that does that look like the Mets aren't making him better, or is it just because he's already awesome? And it's an outlier. It's an extreme situation. I know it. That's like one guy. But I do think that those are important things to keep in mind. And the other side, too, like there's a lot of players that just kind of get included in deals, and probably for financial reasons and all that, who probably are never going to see major league success. And so then a team looks like they're not improving those guys, when no team probably really can. So who are the teams that are going after those top level talents, and who are the teams who are really working to develop those talents rather than kind of go get them once they've been established. There's a lot of variable stuff kind of going on in all of this, but again, that's not me saying like this is a bad graph. I think this is really interesting, and if you look at the way that the teams sort out, I think that it's probably easy to see, you know, like, okay, Pittsburgh doesn't show really well. The Mets don't show really well. And they haven't done a great job with developing that, but they also tend to go and get, at least recently, they're going and getting guys who are already established. You're not going to take somebody who's already amazing and make them amazinger. That's not really a word, but
yeah. There's maybe also some sticky stuff bias in here that I want to say. Like, this is a 2015 to 2022 sample. Now, we've basically said all the mean things first, because the fact of the matter is the usage change thing is, I think, the most interesting. You can see which teams have been most proactive about getting people to change who they are different ways. And I think the usage change probably doesn't factor in as many of those things as much, because like you see like Colorado and like Oakland and Baltimore are like the absolute bottom of the stuff grade, and like there are some reasons for that beyond like just like geography, but you know that Colorado's got some geography things, and he points it out.
Yeah, he does. Then he has the disclaimer.
Teams like Cleveland and Texas, who are, oh, it's not great right now, who have been really excellent about making people throw the right stuff, and I think Texas has done it quite quietly, but they've over the past handful of years been really good. And I like this as a check in on how I've been thinking about which teams have been good. I'm sure the White Sox would grade much better if we just had the past couple of years. It's interesting for me to see that Milwaukee, who has been good for several years, is like bang average in my mind. Like, I feel like they're a good team when it comes to pitcher development. But, and I think this kind of gets at like a sort of question in terms of like the biases that leads us into the pumpkins we're going to talk about. It's like, some pitchers get better because they work with a coach for a long time, get to set goals, get to try to meet them, and have consistency. Some people get better because they leave a bad place. And, you know, some people get better because they go to a good place, right? And they get someone else who maybe just, like, is really good for what they're good at. You know, I think this chart makes me think about those things separately. Are teams good at identifying talent that can be molded? Are teams good at just working with what they have? I imagine that Milwaukee's success, I think we have to give them credit for a lot of working with what they have over a long period of time in my mind. We're not going to talk about them a whole lot today. I just thought that was like a last thing that struck me as looking at this. Tampa also went off the charts. Stupid.
As much as like I look at these things and I'm like, okay, I really want to understand what's going into this and in what ways, like, why Houston and Toronto and Cincinnati are all bunched together. They're very different organizations. Like, how do they get to this place in different ways? And I'd like to ask that question out loud. Again, this is in no way talking about, like, this isn't worth talking about. It absolutely is. And I have to say, one last shout out, Cameron, I love the way you're thinking about trying to make sense of these things, because, whether there even is a flaw baked in, let's say that there is, and I'm not saying there is, but let's say there is, it's still generating conversation and inquiry that is worth exploring and talking about. And I think you made the point before that you can actually learn more from a well-designed kind of experiment that is proven wrong than just a very simple set of data that is spot on right, but doesn't really push the boundaries of the thinking. So I think that's really, really awesome. And this is definitely an account y'all should be following.
I think that all the things we say that I called mean are mostly just, hey, don't interpret this too lovingly beyond what its limits are. I think that lot of the people who would be working with this would know how far they can go. And it's often the job of like the, hey, I'm communicating to someone who's not a statistician sort of people, which is sometimes us, I would hope, to tell people who aren't trying to do statistics what the limits on their interpretation can be. We're not saying that Tampa Bay is perfect at making pitchers better. We're just saying that historically this is what has happened, and you can explain why those would be down to good philosophy, and you can maybe also explain those for some other like financial reasons, and you can explain those for maybe some goopy reasons sometimes. So
I'd love to see
how things transpire. So.
All right, let's transition into talking about what we want to highlight here, which is players who kind of have not lived up to expectations, not necessarily been great, maybe been good and then turned not great, and have kind of come back a little bit. And you want to kind of start here with Tony Gonsolin as kind of the case study for that. But this applies to a lot of other players, and I think you have some other names here you'll bring up, but why don't you kind of wade into the water here in terms of this discussion, and we can start with the numbers of the week, which would be the I like the way you wrote this down, ERA-ish stats.
Yeah, you know, if we're talking about people who are seemingly better, if that's kind of like the catch-all here, between both the front half and the back half, I thought Tony Gonsolin was an interesting case in that he hasn't moved. He's not like some prospect who was greatly hyped, who's finally put it all together after a couple seasons of quasi-linear growth. He's just been a back-of-the-rotation dude for a good team who suddenly has a 1.58 ERA. But I grabbed all of his ERA numbers, and you know, like ERA, Sierra, etc. And I've arranged them in order of non-predictiveness, aka the very first things we're going to read off. The first things, by the way, you would encounter if you just read left to right on Fangraphs, I realized. You have to search for Sierra, but I like threw it on there as well. The things you see first are the least predictive. So he's got a 1.58 ERA and then a 2.87 xERA, which is, you know, more than a run worse, but still good. And he's got a 3.38 FIP, which is like a half run worse, but still pretty good. And then a 3.79 xFIP, which is, you know, almost a half run worse, but still okay. And like a 3.80 Sierra, which is pretty similar. So he's currently, I did a better job today of making sure everything was in front of me. among qualifiers, he's got the fourth best ERA. He's got the second best whip, and he's got the most wins. He's been absolutely essential for the success of a lot of teams in like fantasy categories. Strikeout rate's just 24.5% right now, and he's got an 8% walk rate, which is like 16% K minus BB is pretty pedestrian. The thing I want to point out about him though, and what I like, I want to point this out and put on the cards on the table before we talk about like what it all means and how we think about people. His like 19-ish% hard contact rate is basically the same as last season. He's been a guy who, by the sorts of things that I have trained myself to care about, seems to be sustaining, in part, some things I would otherwise kind of say is unsustainable. You array out those numbers of like least predictive to most predictive, and the story gets worse and worse for him. And yet there's some stuff here that I think tells me I want to push back on that directionality even just a little bit. So like, you know, historically, have you been someone that like when you try to think about who's good, like are you likely to accidentally jump to the fantasy category sort of numbers? Because I know I have. Like I remember
being
the sort of guy who loved the ESPN player writer before I trained myself to hate it.
I think it depends upon what you're trying to accomplish in your format, right? Like if I'm trying to find a guy who I need to fill in for a week, and right now his numbers are good, you know, that might be somebody I'm more willing to take a chance on filling in than somebody who's gotten blown up. But that is very surface level analysis. I mean, that's not really digging too deeply into what might be causing that. And so I think we all kind of fall into the traps because those are the things that are there. If I'm playing ESPN fantasy baseball, I go into the, you know, sort by, it's going to be those categories. So, you know, if you, it's a lot more work to find the under the hood stuff and can be more complicated in trying to understand how to make the under the hood stuff make sense. So I think a lot of people do kind of look at ERA. They might look at like the last 7 days or the last 14 days to see like what's happening lately. Do I want to take the chance right now? I think that there's some value to doing that. There's also a lot of risk, right? Because what happened last week doesn't have necessarily anything to do with what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right. I do like to see if like the trends that are happening in real life are at least supported by some better performances under the hood. You know, it's kind of like is the ERA matching at least the stuff that's a little bit more stable than like xERA? Is someone pitching well, but from a pure stuff standpoint, but also have they gotten smoked? Did they get BABIPed just by some weak line drives that like landed right over the second baseman's head? You know, that the talent that's not a talent. And Gonsolin's not been great by any means, except for the fact that he has
the result,
like the traditional means. And I think he's such an interesting, like, there's a lot of stuff that's fighting and got me conflicted here. I feel like I should be arriving at the conclusion that any sane person should be trying to sell him to any insane person they can find, which is not always that easy. You know, if you're Nick Pollock and you don't look at these things, it's really nice to like look at the PL player page for him. He's like currently 30. Come on back. Where is it? It's disappeared on me. 31st on the list. And that feels like about right for seems like he has a great run, is getting some real go throughout the games, playing for a good team, so you get the wins bonus, and the walk rate hasn't been as bad in the past. Like, yeah, sure, I can see that. The even funnier thing on this page, though, is if you look at like the 2022 projection they have on here from the beginning of the season, it's like almost an identical strikeout rate, almost an identical walk rate. It's like, you know, less than a tick above. And Gonsolin's walk rate last year was not great. He walked 14% of batters, and you're gonna get 27% strikeout rate, but like that's not gonna cut it. That's 13% K minus BB is pretty mid. And here he is fulfilling basically exact this like rough back of the napkin projection, but that projection came along with like a 4 ERA and a 1.25 WHIP projection. Like, it's just because he's continued this like incredible string of like good hard contact numbers. And I will say the ground ball rate hasn't been low. He's allowing weak and medium contact into the air, which is better this year than it normally is. And you have to wonder, like, if this is who he can be, is there a world where the models we've trained in past years, like FIP, XFIP, Sierra, etc., are missing the guys who are going to be able to sustain some more weak contact? And, you know, I pointed out many times in the past, in season hard contact rate gets stable about the same rate that walk rate does. Once people are who they are, we can kind of trust them. So if Gonsolin is this kind of guy, do I want to buy in that maybe he's better than his Sierra? Do I want to buy in that maybe he is like capable of like a 3.3 ERA guy sort of season, rest of season? You know, maybe,
yeah.
Especially if the over, like, traditional, like statistician, there's over, like, I know that this stuff shouldn't stick guy, like myself, would be selling him. So it's a weird quandary.
Well, here's what I think would be interesting, would be to go back and look at guys who, for a full season, were able to outperform those kinds of numbers and what made that possible. So, like, what's the prototypical kind of player that can outperform them? We've talked about that with like line drive rate. There are a handful of guys who maybe seem to have like a skill in that regard that a lot of other players don't, but most of the time that's going to land in the average range. A couple of things that I notice when I look immediately. He has a 90% left on base percentage right now.
yeah.
And so, you know, if you look at what Zips and Steamer and the Bat have for that for rest of season, it's 74, 73, 71. So you're talking about 18 to 19% less strand rate. That could blow up some of those numbers right quick if that comes to fruition. And I'm going to ask you this question because I honestly don't know what would, and maybe you don't either, and I'm sorry if this is putting you on the spot, but what would be a league average, like a home run to fly ball ratio that you would say is like, okay.
Oh, that's a number I don't think about very often. I'm going to say probably right now 12, 13 somewhere seems right. Normal.
Yeah, so he's at 8.1%. Now, it right. Could also be that he's doing something to limit those fly balls becoming home runs. It could be that the dead ball is helping him maybe a little bit more than other people because of his stuff. Or it could just be that there's some regression coming in that regard as well. So, you know, I hear everything you're saying and I completely understand it. And I think that's why these situations are really hard to know. I think the most likely case in any of these situations is the guy we've seen is the guy that he'll probably be, but he's different because he's not been around for all that long, right? So is it possible that he figured something out? I mean, at the major league level, right? Like he played a little bit in 2019, 2020, some appearances. So anyway, I guess the long and short of this is somebody who's suddenly really good is probably more likely to find his way back to being whatever he's been than is suddenly mm-hmm. amazing. Which isn't to say it's not possible, but I think it's a far more likely outcome. So if I'm playing the law of averages, I'm looking at that left on base percentage. We talked about that with Robbie Ray last year.
Mm-hmm. And he's come back to earth.
Yeah, the home run to fly ball ratio being really low and not really because of anything we can point to say he's definitely doing this better. I'm thinking that this is somebody I'm going to try and get somebody to buy into. But at the same time, he could just have made a change about like what Robbie Ray did last year, right? I'm going to make a decision to throw the ball more in the strike zone, and it worked for him for a year. But this is a very interesting case. I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah, I liked him very much in the, this doesn't fit our usual stories for someone getting good. So we ought to use it to like evaluate some of those biases. Are we willing to believe things are different more when there is that story we can tell rather than just, it's another year, maybe he's a little bit healthier, maybe things just kind of happen slightly differently. I think it's making me more willing to discard some of those new place, so better pitcher sort of biases to a degree. But like, you know, that's why I pulled up the chart earlier. You can see that actually a lot of teams do make people seemingly, do make them. That is ascribing causality. I want to scrub that. Players who have moved to most teams have not gotten better as a result. So I guess that should make me more willing to believe that if someone's going to get much better and they haven't moved, you know, does that make it less believable? Maybe not. We know what to point to at this point. You know, line drive rate, you stole it from me before I could say it, but it's not even stealing at this point, right?
Sorry.
You know what we're talking about. Like, left on base rate, we know what we're talking about, these things. It makes me wonder almost is if I am the person selling and I'm this hyper rational, my numbers say I got to, are people like Gonsolin easily stolen from me in that sense? I'm not sure. I don't tend to roster them long enough to get in this spot, I guess. Probably would have sold them a while ago and then just been regretting it. So I think that's all kind of funny. I will say that he's had like four seasons of like equal length at this point, but not quite equal length. Let me see. Like he has, a 40 inning, 46 inning, 55 inning, and a 74 inning this year season. And he's had a whip under 1.03 in three of those four. And then last year where he just couldn't find the strike zone was the only bad one. ZRA's been under 3 in all of them except for last year where he couldn't find the strike zone. But he's never been great by walk rate, except for one time he was. So yeah, it's like, do we also, whenever we think of guys who haven't been all that successful, kind of smooth things out much more than we have been, forget where the valleys and the peaks have been. In looking to this, I'm kind of realizing just how much I've been willing to do that. I've kind of described him as just kind of mid rather than a bunch of different waves of really good through some bad luck and good luck, and also a bunch of different waves of good performance and bad performance. So I'm really interested to see how it all pans out for him rest of the season. I have no idea what to say.
Yeah, it's very, very complex. Why don't we talk about these last two players that you have? Maybe we'll do the 5-minute version, like 2 minutes apiece, and then that leaves us a minute to kind of wrap up. But you've also got here Tyler Anderson and Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, I grabbed Anderson as he's coming to the Dodgers contrast, who, again, I also kind of find to be a little bit pumpkin-y, and has also just been killing it. You know, 8 wins, 4th, 1.04 whip is 28th, 3.23 ERA is actually only 57th among qualifiers. God, what's happening to ERA this year? But like, that's still helping you quite a bit, right? Strikeout rate's still abysmal and actively hurting you unless you're in a situation where you can kind of get away with that. So like, is it great? But it's been good. And those are kind of separate things. Nick's got in 58th as I'm staring at it. And, you know, if you look across the board of the peripherals that I tend to care about, the hard contact rate's been better than average, even though he allows so many opportunities for contact. Like 21% strikeout rate, 4 and change walk rate, right? So he's allowing almost 75% of batters to like hit the ball into play. But like, under a third of those balls in play are hard contact, so you get like 50% of the time the batter just hits it weakly into play. Like, is that fully sustainable? I would say probably not. But he's had a couple pretty decent seasons by that metric, and he's kind of been that sort of guy, right? He's supposed to be that guy if he's still around. So am I willing to buy that he's this good? No, absolutely not. I don't think you should be willing to say Dodgers made him good. And that's the sort of thing that you got to be very careful about. There's not a whole lot in terms of like the any of the models that you should care about saying that this is a guy who's going to sustain a low threes, anything. And also strikeouts matter. This guy's not helping you that much. So again, I don't think that people who are making informed decisions are going to be clutching onto him. Nor should you necessarily, but it's an interesting case of I don't think we should be treating these things differently just because they have or haven't been with this team for a while. And that's why I wanted to rate them next to you. I don't know. Do you have any like innate desire to trust in Tyler Anderson just because he has 8 wins? Probably not.
No. As a matter of fact, like if I had him, I would be like taking my cash to the bank, right? Like that's amazing. And also, like, is there any way that I could try and get something for him, because it looks better than, again, what's the likely outcome of the second half for Tyler Anderson? I could be wrong. Maybe he ends the year with 22 wins. I could be wrong. Who knows? Yeah, I mean, don't think that's the most likely outcome. I don't think that's the most likely outcome. And I guess with all these guys, I guess that's the thing. Like, if you take all the pumpkins who get dressed up for the ball, right? So many more of them are going to turn back into pumpkins than are going to get the keys to the castle. And so, like, if you're playing the law of averages, cash in and sell high. Sometimes you're going to give away a guy who figured it out. But in the long run, you're going to cash more than you don't by selling these kinds of guys high, I think. And Nick Pivetta included. But is there something you wanted to throw in about Nicky?
Oh, I have even less belief in him in this really interesting way, in that like he's been getting absolutely smoked. His hard contact rate is like, I have to look it up again to make sure that I wasn't an aberration before. 29.6%. That's abysmal. Really, really bad. He's got 8 wins again. He's got a ton of innings pitched, which means that his pretty okay strikeout rate is getting you more strikeouts, and that's a big thing.
Yeah,
he's right. Also got good ratios right now, despite, again, 16% K minus BB is pretty mid. He's allowing a lot of hard contact, not a lot of soft contact, and that's a recipe for disaster usually. Except I think I need to pull it up. I think his line drive rate is helping him, but I need to triple check that so I don't say anything stupid. But yeah, like there's just nothing about this that seems normal. The thing I did look up earlier is that if you look at him through like the lens of, has he done this before? Can we buy into this? He's actually had, like, if rolling WOBA and XOBA charts are something you're into, I set it to 200 PAs to get yourself like a half season-ish thing. He's had better half season-ish moments than he has right now. And he's turned back. And I think that's a nice piece of like context. It's nice to know what normal is. Line drive rate is 25%. It's totally normal. Interesting. Yeah, it just seems like there's been some luck there. I'm sure if we looked at the other things, he's probably got a pretty decent left on base rate then as well. But yeah, that's a guy who, though, I brought him up particularly because he was kind of a sexy sleeper among a couple of high stakes folks, and he's had a great last month in change. So there's kind of some, they were right, you should have held on to me, he's going to help you win your league sort of vindication moments happening right now. And I want to say, even though his stuff grades have been less of a disaster than they were in the first week of the season, still looks like he's about a bang average pitcher for the most part right now. And that's more, I think, a place where you're going to be able to get someone to bite. The data doesn't say he's been great, so like the smart person should be willing to bite, but you get that sort of he's been better kind of lately, and some smart people said he's good despite the fact that everything else is kind of just pretty normal. So you know, I don't know what your pumpkin ball metaphor really means if we dig into it. Are the pumpkins dancing, like as in literal pumpkins wearing dresses here?
I don't think we want to pull at that thread too much.
I don't.
Yeah. I will say, though, that when you're getting or looking at tweets, or you're reading what people who are playing high stakes are saying, context is really, really, really important. It's a different game than you're playing with your buddies in daily fantasy. Yep. And so Nick Pivetta could be a league winner in a huge buy-in thing with, like, you know, where 1,000 players are rostered, because where you got him, he's outperforming the other players at that ADP to a statistical significantly different. What am I trying to say here? You know, he's doing better than the other guys at that ADP, and that's significant. It's not just luck. Right? It doesn't necessarily mean that's going to continue. And even if it does, it doesn't mean it's going to help you and your 10 teamer. So just be aware of that context. It doesn't mean that those high stakes guys are wrong. It just means it might not apply to your situation. And and you don't want to get caught up in that kind of like chasing the dragon thing that they're chasing, because they're really smart. And yeah, they are. And they're really good at what they do. And they're not playing the same game you are. They're playing chess. You're playing Candyland, right? Like, that's not to knock it. I'm just, they're it's different. Home leagues where you're buying in $30 with 10 guys who might half of them aren't paying attention. Maybe like, it's just super different than a $2,000 buy-in league where everybody is like intensely engaged and the rosters are super deep. So yeah, it's just very different.
Should also note Candyland, totally fine game. Sorry. Really fun game. Have you played Sorry recently?
You know, I bought one and my kids were too young. I was just over ambitious, but it had like all these new rules and I didn't like it. I want old school Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a big fan of old school Sorry. And I think I got it for like $15 a couple months ago. And it's a great play. It's a great game to play if you're very comfortable in how angry you can make the other people around you. It's almost not a kid's game. So I know that's not necessarily the baseball note that I want to close on, but if y'all want to have some fun and enjoy your 4th of July weekend, I'm definitely
maybe ruin a friendship or two. Yeah. All right. On that note, that is going to bring us to the end of our episode. Alexander, we didn't hit the 40 minute mark, but we did get in under an hour. So I think that is worth noting. Have an awesome holiday, and I will see you on the other side of all this summer vacation-y stuff. And if you could just remind the people where they could find us.
Well, they can find you on Twitter at TheCorkedMatt. I'm on Twitter at Chase_Rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.